Broadcasting from the internet in Rip City, this is the Coin Rejects, episode 68. And we're back. I am, as I said, on the internet with my fellow rejects.
I'm Jordan.
I'm Brandon.
Ian.
Whoa. And I'm Brian. And you can find us on the web at coinrejects.com. You can find us on Instagram. We are coinrejects. On Twitter, we are coinrejects. You can send us an email at coinrejects@gmail.com. You can send us a voicemail at
503-766-2263.
And we are not doing any voicemails or emails this episode. We are going to start changing things up a little bit, and we're going to have start having two distinct show formats. And this show format is going to focus on the game or the meme of the episode, and we're going to just focus on that for this episode. And then next episode, next month, we'll be focusing on listener emails, voicemails, any topics, game room updates, and any topics that we come across. So we'll kind of stagger those episodes. One month will be a game, one month will be updates and feedback and topics, and we're going to see how that works out for us going forward. And let us know what you guys think, if you like the new format, if you don't like the new format, if you have suggestions, we're always open. Send us an email at the aforementioned email address and voicemail.
503-766-2263.
There you go. Anything else you guys want to say about that stuff?
No, I mean, we'll have more room for more feedback. So, you know, if we didn't get you on before, we definitely will have a little bit more room there. We can give you more feedback on what we're doing in our little arcade worlds. Better game room updates, better stories to tell. And we'll have a little bit more time to elaborate before we try to pass out while we're talking.
Yep. Agree with all that stuff.
Cool. Well, let's get right in.
I'm hyped. I'm hyped about this game and talking about it. And let's do it.
Well, let's get into it. So we'll kick it over to Ian because he was the one that got to pick the game. So kick it off, Ian.
That's right. So the game I picked for this episode is Sega's Choplifter from 1985. And I picked this game because I remember playing the PC version, but I never really played the coin-op version. I think it's like a fairly major title that was popular both on home machines and in the arcade, you know, popular enough to get an arcade license, a title by a pretty major manufacturer. But it doesn't seem to get too much love. Not too many examples out there, and I just thought it would be interesting to check it out and see what it had to offer.
Do you want to go right into explaining the gameplay mechanics?
For sure. So Choplifter is kind of reminds me of Defender a bit. You are piloting a helicopter, and you have a four-way joystick, or is it eight-way? I guess it's probably eight-way.
Yeah, eight-way.
Probably eight-way.
And two buttons. One is fire and one is rotate. Rotate will move your helicopter so it can face left towards the screen or to the right. In the left and right orientations, you shoot missiles. And in the forward-facing orientation, you drop bombs. It's sort of like a side-scrolling shmup, except it scrolls both right and left. And unlike most shmups where you only shoot on a horizontal, the angle of your shot changes depending on the angle of your chopper, which is based on your speed that you're currently going at. So the object of the game is to rescue 20 hostages per stage, which is called a sortie. You can carry 8 of them at a time, and you have to navigate through surface-to-air missile launchers, enemy airplanes, and other various enemies who are trying to shoot you down in the process of rescuing hostages. And then once you get them over some sort of border, you land, and they go out of your chopper and into some sort of base. So that's pretty much the game. Fly, pick up hostages, shoot other things down, shoot from air to ground, shoot down planes, try not to die. Scoring is based on anything you shoot down and also number of hostages rescued. And I think it's kind of an interesting mechanic. You get more points for every hostage per loads. You can carry a maximum of 8, and I believe it goes up 200 points per hostage. So 2, 4, 6, 8, 1,000, 1,200, up to 8 times, 1,600 for the max. And if you end your... So if you think about it, you have to rescue 20 hostages. You can carry 8 at a time. So you have to make a minimum of 3 trips in order to finish the level. And if you manage to get 3 full loads, then you get a bonus rescued. There's also a fuel gauge, so you have to manage the fuel a bit, although in our gameplay, that wasn't a major factor like it can be in some of the early shmups like Astro Blaster or something like that. You really have to watch the fuel gauge, but it didn't seem like it was a lot of pressure on that.
Yeah, I don't think I ever know fuel. Did any of you guys have any issues with fuel ever in your playing this? No.
No.
Maybe later stages, I don't know.
It also refills when you drop passengers off, so if you're not screwing around, then you don't really have to worry about it.
Waste of resources.
Cool. And then when you land to rescue the hostages, various land-based tanks and jeeps will come around and try to attack you. So it's a pretty hostile game. There's a lot going on all over the screen, but I think it's kind of an interesting one. I think that pretty much covers it. Oh, you get an extra choplifter at 20,000 points. I don't know if you get more than one in this game. And you get a 10,000 point bonus at the end of the level.
That's a big bonus for Phil, you know, just you know, redeeming yourself for one level. But the fucking levels are so hard. Oh my God. I suppose it's worthy.
I wanted to read this little passage from Wikipedia because I think it's pretty funny about the gameplay. It says, in Choplifter, the player assumes the role of a combat helicopter pilot. The player attempts to save hostages being held in barracks in territory ruled by the evil Bungling Empire. The player must collect the hostages described in the backstory as delegates to the United Nations Conference on Peace and Child Rearing and transport them safely to the nearby U.S. Postal Service building, all while fighting off hostile tanks and other enemy combatants. According to the backstory, the helicopter parts were smuggled into the country disguised as mail sorting machines.
Oh, you know, that actually makes sense.
I actually put that in Wikipedia to see if one of you guys would read that. I totally just made that shit up.
It's so good. You did such a good job.
It seems actually on par because I was going to say that why would you fly into enemy territory with a gray plane? But now I know why. It should be like camouflage to your environment or color to your environment, not fucking gray. So that, if that's accurate, that's, I guess that explains my, I was gonna complain about that, but yeah.
It's a good backstory. I don't know where it, I don't think it's anywhere on the video game chapter. Yeah. I think it's probably in like a Broderbund manual or something, but.
Obviously you're not fucking fooling anyone with SAM missiles shooting at you and jets. I mean,
this game has some pretty heavy imperialist overtones going on to it. You know, you got the American flag flying from your base, and then first level is a desert country of some sort, which is kind of a weird license for a Japanese video game company. I wonder if they localized it in some way in Japan. Like, is there a Japanese flag on the base? Who knows?
I don't think so. Because
you think it was released in Japan?
Yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So and also, a lot of the Japanese culture does like a lot of the American stuff. Like, so yeah, I don't really see them changing it.
I gotcha. Anyhow, to me, I think the most interesting thing about this game is that it's not an arcade game, right? Can we talk about that yet?
We haven't talked about it, but that's definitely something I wanted to talk about. I think it's really common for coin-op games to have gotten home conversions, and it's pretty rare to go the other way around. So I believe this was originally for the Apple II.
Apple II is where I remember playing it, and it fucking kicked ass for Apple II games, for sure.
Yeah. And it was popular enough, a home computer game, that Sega licensed it to create the coin-op version. And there are not many games I can think of that went that way. It's like, what was the, was it Cosmic Chasm that was on the Vectrex and then got the coin-op conversion? Just a few handful of games that went from home computer to the arcades instead of the other way around, which, you know, pretty much every arcade game got a home conversion. But I thought it was an interesting thing and would make for some good discussion. That was part of my decision to pick this game.
Yeah, the other thing is the flyer, which is interesting because the flyer is 1985 when the game was released, and I believe it's 82. It's either 81 or 82 for the computer or home port, or not port. Sorry, that's not a port. It's a
the original game,
original release. Yeah.
So this game was written by Dan Gorlin, and it was released by Broderbund Software for the Apple IIe, I believe. I don't know if it played on the regular Apple II, but that's what I remember this game as. And it really was good. I mean, there was this game. There was Load Runner, which was basically Space Panic, which we have played before. I'm sure Space Panic came out before Load Runner. But, I mean, those were like big games for the Apple. I remember having like friends who had like a cool stepdad, and he had an Apple computer, so I would go over there and we could play video games. So
was yeah,
a rich kid at that point. It was the cool stepdad had
the tangent about Load Runner is that Load Runner, so Space Panic is the game that originally had that mechanic, and then Broderbund made a PC version, PC clone of it called Load Runner, and then there was a coin-op conversion of Load Runner for from the PC version converted to the arcades.
No way, that can't be. Wow, because there, you know, what was it, mid 80s or something? They tried to like convert it back. That's strange.
84, IREM made an arcade conversion.
Oh my god! And who did Space Panic? Universal. It was Universal.
Okay. Yeah, there's a couple Load Runner arcade releases.
Oh yeah,
I was mentioning
later Load Runner, like Load Runner Dig Fight and things like that, that had Load Runner in the name. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, on the flyer, the thing that's funny though that I was mentioning is it's an 85 release, and the flyer mentions that it's the number one computer game in the U.S. is now available as an arcade machine. It's like 3 years later. I don't really think it could be a translation thing, but it's 3 years later is kind of like, yeah, or that's done for already. It's like this is probably like a filler, you know, for like the time. They just didn't have much content, so it's the number one computer game was irrelevant 3 years later. So I just thought it's not really a selling point. So
a computer game that was number one at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically they don't say when. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like this game is kind of ever present. It's like ported to so many things that it just shows up everywhere. It's like, you know, on the Apple II, on the 5200 and on the Master System, and Famicom, and just all these different places. It seems like it's just ever present that, you know, Choplifter, you've played it on something throughout, you know, over the years.
Yeah,
I remember the C64 version. I'm pretty sure that I played. Yeah.
Yeah, I never played it on the 64, but I had a PC XT clone in my youth that got this was a game that I played a lot on it in all of its four color green and yellow CGA glory.
I tried playing it on 7800 last night, and I only have 2600 joysticks hooked up to it, and I think you actually have to have the 7800 joystick that has two buttons on either side to use one to do firing and one to do the rotation, so I couldn't really play it.
Did you only have rotation, so you're just like the passive player?
No, I couldn't. It's like the button didn't even work, so I don't know what the deal is with that, because I played other games and the button worked, but so something to do with maybe the 7800 controller, that you had to have that controller hooked up to make it work. But yeah, definitely looks not as good as what we just played.
There's someone on YouTube does a bunch of videos of where they compare all of the different ported versions of a game.
Yeah.
And I like looking at those sometimes just to see what all the different systems could do.
Yeah, I like doing that too. I love when there's a multi-release of a console game, and it's like, you know, Mortal Kombat was on every single system, Game Boy, Game Gear, like SNES, Genesis, and it's like those videos are cool to watch, the graphics comparisons and all that. And then they'll show the arcade port and be like, oh yeah, this all looked like shit.
So I kind of seem to remember the first level, them taking it easy on you on the computer versions. Like maybe there wasn't tanks or maybe there wasn't the Jeeps, or that seemed to be it. Like once you like got down there, you could just kind of wait for the dudes to all climb aboard. And all you really had to battle was the airplanes in the air and then a few turrets on the ground. Did you notice that in the show when they were showing the different ports and stuff?
I haven't looked at the one for this game specifically.
Okay. I seem to remember the first level you could actually get through pretty easily, like most games where they just kind of give it to you for the first level and then turn up the intensity for the next ones.
Yeah.
It seems like for this version, they just really throw everything at you at the beginning like crazy.
Oh my God. Yeah. There's that, you know, after the first two planes and then there's like three turrets on the ground and right there. I mean, I died so many times when I was playing this game, like right there. And you're not even to the first base to pick up the people or anything. It's just like,
you haven't even got full altitude. You're like, I'm going. And then
right. You probably haven't figured out which button turns you around even at that point. And then all of a sudden there's like three turrets, two planes, and all the bullets are like coming right at you no matter where you go.
Well, it's reprogrammed by Sega, so there you go. It's formatted for the arcade coin drop world.
They fucking turned up the intense, yeah. For sure. Yeah.
Dan Gorlin was pissed.
This game has been modified to fit your screen.
Yeah. You'll notice the bottom and top black bars. Yeah, so this is the Sega System 1 and 2. I don't know why it's 1 and 2 release. I think they're in between hardware at the time, but this is kind of when they started to get into like the parallax scrolling in their games, Sega that is. And I think it might be rarer in the System 1 boards, but the most popular game on System 2 hardware is Wonder Boy, which again, you know, a lot of the Sega stuff wasn't really popular here yet.
I don't think I've ever played that game.
Yeah.
Wonder Boy, I totally remember that.
Wonder Boy also... Actually, no, System... Sorry, I take that back. System 1 had Flicky, and... but not here, though, right? Because it was a Bally Midway license, right?
Correct.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so...
It was a six-pack game, wasn't it, Flicky?
I think so, yeah.
I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah,
I think so, yeah.
I think this was like the transition point where a lot of the Sega stuff started to flip over from... Oh, Up and Down was also a System 1 game on Sega hardware, so we've also played that.
Is Up and Down
Mr. Viking and a bunch of games as well.
Yeah. So System 1 and 2 releases. So
how about Mr. Driller? Is that one of them?
That's a Namco game.
Oh, okay. Mister's got me confused here. I think I played Flicky, I played Wonder Boy. I haven't played a lot of mid 80s Sega stuff, I don't think.
Yeah, I think this is when Sega was just starting to maybe add a little bit more releases over here because, you know, why would they license Up and Down and Flicky and all those things? It was kind of an era where they were doing a little bit of both. So
kind of sounds like they're throwing in the towel. I mean, that they're giving their game.
You mean going like first party releases instead of licensing?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as far as a presence in the United States anyways.
Well, I mean, had a great presence, you know, in the early 80s. I mean, Sega Gremlin had tons of good games. I mean, to me, it seems like...
After the crash, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Kind of phoning it in. I mean, they're licensing computer games. They're selling their games to Midway. Doesn't seem like they're a real dominating force in the United States at that point.
I mean, obviously, later, they were the king of the arcades for a long time.
When did the Outruns start outrunning people?
86. That came out the year after this game. So that started all those super scalar games that...
Space Harrier, Power Drift.
What's the Afterburner?
All right. Then they're getting back into it. I recognize them from that era. So yeah, this seems like kind of a low point, maybe, or beginning of a high point.
But like Ian was saying, like, yeah, the first party releases basically, like with the founding of like AM2 and all that, and this, they were just kicking ass. Like, they had this huge spree where they were basically untouchable until the, you know, early to mid 90s when Midway just fucking crushed everything.
Did they have a fighting game that was kind of popular, a samurai thing? Shinobi?
Virtua Fighter and
Virtua Fighter.
That was much later, though.
Okay, how about
Shinobi? Shinobi was System 16, so that was like a little bit after this.
Shinobi's
game.
Shinobi's not a fighting game, though. Like, that's a side-scrolling platformer.
Yeah, now I would think it was shit, but back then I thought it was okay.
That's a good game.
Altered Beast, too.
Oh, God.
Did they do Golden Axe? Am I misremembering that?
Yeah, those are all System 16 games. That's why you saw all of those basically on the Genesis at the time, or a little bit after.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, kind of all games I really don't like. But.
Yeah, that was like the 86, 87 era.
Quarter Munchers.
Oh, those are good games.
No, they're just designed to take your quarter, just like this one. What do you think about the art on this, man? It's got a bezel. It's got a marquee. Says the name. You guys have any thoughts on it? No? I think it looks like just generic comic book art. I mean, it doesn't do much for me. Kind of uninspired. I mean, it seemed like to a point everything just kind of looked like comic book drawings or whatever. I do like the side art on it, but it's got the definite 80s vibe. It's got kind of a grid in Sega. Very generic. Very much, I think, like a ripoff of the Atari System 1 art.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely.
Instead of stripes, it's a grid. It's almost like the same colors, even. I like the look of it. It's fine. But, I don't think they're really, whoever their art designer was, hopefully they weren't paying him too much.
Yeah, it's pretty minimal on the side art, but I do think it looks really good. Even though there's not much to it, I think it looks sharp. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't think I saw the dedicated picture until this one right here in the show notes. And yeah, I really like the look of it. I think the marquees is fine. I think it looks kind of good. I like the 3D text and you kind of get the story of you got the helicopters, you got the hostages, you've even got the ships in the background from like the second sortie. So you kind of have like a whole story of what's going to happen up there in the marquee. And I also like the control panel overlay. It looks pretty good with the side art. I think it's kind of funny. Yeah. It has like the little smiley faces for one player and two player. That's a little out of left field, but other than that, I think it looks pretty cool.
Yeah, this cabinet does look a lot like the System 1 Atari cabinets, even the shape, except for it doesn't have the little leg on the back, but it kind of reminds me of a combination of Stargate, an MVS cab, and a System 1 cab, and then a little Atari with a little bump out on the front CPE. But I mean, I like the I actually like the grid artwork. I think it looks better than the System 1 games. Kind of reminds me of the Sega Genesis and Sega Master System cartridge artwork. And the control panel's not, I guess it kind of carries along the same theme with like the black, red, and grid, but it's kind of generic. Wonder Boy also came in this cab. So it was kind of like their System 1 cab. I don't know if any other games came in it though, and it is pretty rare to find. I think these cabinets. I haven't really seen them.
Surprising, you know, that there aren't more, since it is a generic cab. It's obviously designed just to change the marquee, and there really isn't even a bezel. I think it's just an instruction card that gets slipped in.
Yeah.
Glass. Yeah. I think that the only game-specific artwork is the marquee and the instruction card, and then the CPO and the side art are generic, and even the, you can see there's a little bit of like blue and maybe red or white around the very edges of the monitor bezel. I think all that stuff is generic across all the games, and they only had just the instruction card and marquee per game. I do think the instruction card for this game looks like ass. Like, it doesn't really fit in. It's just green background with some text and a couple graphics on it, and they could have done a better job on that, I think.
Yeah, this you're mentioning how like Sega Gremlin and all that stuff, you know, like they had a lot of releases, but this is actually a Sega release. This is well after that, and I think they're going back to their roots of, you know, you know that Japanese games had candy cabs for the most part, and so that's commonly all you ever saw was an instruction bezel insert, and that's about it. You wouldn't see even a marquee most of the time. And
control panel totally looks like a candy cab control panel now that you mention it.
Yeah, the funny thing about this, though, is that I was looking at the CPO, and I noticed in this picture that it there's two black buttons next to the joystick, but it's a two-button game. So I think this is either set up to play other games in this actual cabinet, because there is only two buttons. There's the rotate and fire.
I was noticing that as well.
I was just looking up control panel images to see if, like, is there really three buttons on this?
No, there's not. Because you have the player one and two start as well up there. And now I don't even know if that, you know, who knows? You know, this could have been restored by someone that, you know, they left the fucking lock bar on. So, I mean, it's not really a true restore, but it is a nice cab. It's definitely in good shape. Mm-hmm. It does its job, but I think this was the era and the time where, like Ian was saying, this is pre-Outrun. This is pre, you know, they had a presence, but this was like a reemergence, I think, and it wasn't the best time for, you know, whipping your dick out for the game budgets.
Well, yeah, I think the thing that's interesting about this is, like, 85, that's the same year the NES came out, and the NES is really what pulled the video game industry out of that slump that started in 82. So, like, not going whole hog on the cabinet and licensing a game they already knew was successful feels very appropriate for that kind of point of, you know, we've been 2.5 years into this big recession in the industry. Let's just do something safe and not spend too much money on it and get a winner. So I think that all feels very in keeping with the era. And then, you know, once you get into 86 and later and stuff starts to recover, then you see those, like, really out of control cabinets, like the Deluxe Motion Outrun, you know, all those big simulator cabinets that they started cranking out from the late 80s through the 90s.
Yeah. And it's a really good point. Like, the System 1 and 2 hardware, there was, besides Wonder Boy, nothing was released in the States besides, like, those Bally Midway license that I mentioned. And then, yeah, the next big release after this, you had Hang On, and you had Space Harrier. And this is when, if you research a lot of this early Sega hardware, it's really interesting, is, like, they did a lot of modular upgrades to their hardware. That's why you always see, like, the Sega System 1, 2, 16, Model 2, 3, you know, and so on. And they were just constantly improving their hardware, and you just started to see better and better games. The Super Scalar shit. Yeah, after Space Harrier, their next big hit was Outrun and Afterburner. And then you get into the System 16 era, which was Shinobi. So, and all the other stuff that we talked about. So, yeah, it was a really good reawakening. So,
I really like all of their Super Scalar games.
Me too. Outrun
has a big... I'm very fond of that game. I just think it's my ideal arcade racer, but all the other Super Scalar games are pretty awesome too.
I actually like Power Drift, which was a little bit after the end of the Super Scalar stuff, and I played the shit of that at Red Robin. That was my Outrun.
Yeah, that's a good one too. All right, we want to get into talking about graphics since we're halfway there.
Yeah.
Who wants to start?
I guess... go ahead.
I was just going to say, I dig the graphics on this game. Even though they're kind of simplistic, they really get the job done. You can tell what's going on. And I think there's lots of good animations, like the animation of the helicopter turning around, and just the fact that you can, you know, land with it in all the various rotations. Like, if you... you know, rotate it where it's just straight on, where you can have the little guys entering into your helicopter from the sides. It's always a cool little thing that they didn't have to do, that, you know, you can rotate it around, and the little men are waving at you and jumping up and down, and all the guns and weapons all have pretty good animation to them. And there's so many of them. Like, it seems like there's always something new kind of popping out, like, oh, there's a Jeep. Oh, here's a tank. And here's, like, a drone or something that's popping out of the ground. And so it's always something interesting happening on the screen. And they're just barraging you with bullets at the same time. And then on the second sortie, when you're on the aircraft carriers, you know, there's also lots of little hidden things, like the submarines coming up and missiles coming up out of the water. And so, yeah, I think overall the graphics look really good especially for, I guess maybe they could have doctored them up a little bit for the arcade release. I'm not exactly sure how different this looks from the original Apple II, but I know it looks better than like the 7800, so I
think it looks fancier than the Apple.
Yeah,
the Apple II couldn't do shit for graphics. This is like probably the graphically best version of Choplifter ever.
Yeah, so I think overall, for me, the graphics, I think they look really good and they do a good job.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think I really like that all the graphics are really bright and there's a lot going on. I think they're just really well done. And I dig the parallax scrolling. You know, there's parallax in the foreground and the background, and it gives you a really good sense of motion. One other thing about the animation, I was watching some YouTube videos of the second sortie where you land on the submarine, and I noticed that when the hostages are climbing into your Choplifter, they have to like climb up more than they do when they're on the ground. And I thought that was just a really cool little detail that, you know, they didn't have to add, but just shows that they were paying attention to the little things. And I like that.
Yeah, I feel like there's lots of little details in here that just make it that much better.
Yeah, I can't remember if I've ever played the PC versions or any of the home releases, but so I can't really comment on what looks better. I know it obviously is better, right? But I don't know, it still seems like they could have done a little bit more. Like they the palette of the game is kind of drab, but that's, I guess that's probably what they're trying to capture. And the I do like the details. Like I like the like you were saying, like the little animations here and there, but it seems like they could have used the real estate and a little bit better. Seems like they could have made it a little bit. Yeah, maybe they could. Who knows? But it does seem a little watered down. Like Brian was saying, like they could have beefed it up a little bit. It definitely does feel like a PC or like a console type game when you're playing it, even without knowing that.
I don't know, man. I think they did a pretty awesome job on the graphics. Another thing I thought was kind of cool is the instrument display up at the top. And maybe this is my only beef on the graphics on this game, is that the actual play area is not the whole screen. And maybe they could have reduced some of the top bar instrument gauge stuff or done that a little differently. But I do like that all of the instruments up there respond when you're playing, like your altitude and horizon and speed indicator are all actually showing what you're doing in the Choplifter. And I just thought that was really cool. You know, they didn't have to do any of that.
Yeah, they didn't have to, but it adds nothing because you're too focused in the action. So it's kind of like, I think they more kind of fill up the screen just to not sacrifice the frame rate is probably what they did. Like they do in a lot of games where they just make the life bar or the stat screen fucking huge and just almost letterbox the game to, you know, to not tax the system. But yeah, like the
screenshot of the Apple II Choplifter in the notes, like go look at that and then compare that to what we just
did. Yeah, I'm going to say that I think the graphics are great on this game, and maybe I'm just spoiled from, you know, remembering it as an Apple game. You know, it's basically like stick figures and monochromatic. I think this game looks beautiful. That second screen where you've got like the sunset sky in the background, I really like that. And the parallax scrolling. I mean, maybe I'm used to, you know, early 80s games and 70s games. And so now looking at a mid to late 80s game, this is, you know, these graphics are really, really good. I mean, I think a lot of the earlier designers would love to have, you know, the ability to work with some of these colors and stuff. I didn't find that there was ever a time where, you know, there's like the same colors being used over and over and you can't tell what's going on. Everything is very obvious. I can see a tank. I can see a Jeep. I can see a turret. I can see my chopper. The people are very realistic. They have a multitude of motions that they do. They wave. They, you know, they run. They stop. They're very convincing. I mean, they're great little characters. I think the graphics are one of the best. The best things about this game, your base, you know, the places where they're hanging out, where you're like shooting it open, you know, you can see the door. It's got a cool domed roof, you know, you see, like architectural details on the buildings.
It is pretty detailed, but the the title screen makes you think there's going to be more. It's a little bit of a letdown.
Yeah, I think that's a fair criticism. Like the almost full screen sized motion graphics on the title screen. It's kind of like the opening of Street Fighter 2. You know, you've got this huge city and these giant sprites, and then your actual player characters aren't quite up to that level.
Yeah, I'm not saying the graphics are bad. I'm just saying, like, for this hardware, other games on this hardware look way better, and they probably didn't have to upgrade it that much, you know, to make an improvement, because the original PC versions were and console versions were not that great. But
yeah,
just seems kind of like it seems like an older game when you're playing it based on all the other stuff from this era.
I think a lot of the games of this era that have player characters, you know, thinking of Shinobi or Altered Beast or whatever, I don't care for their graphics too much, specifically because the player animations are so stiff. Like, they just seem weird and unnatural when they're walking around and jumping or whatever. And it's probably that, you know, it's mostly machines on the screen, but I don't get that vibe from it. And that, like, crappy animation really turns me off to a lot of the platformer style games from this era, from, like, you know, 85 to the early 90s, where the animation was just crappy looking. And this just feels really fluid and natural, and I like it a lot.
Yeah, they had to obviously scale it so you could fit, you know, a chopper and enemies, and it's more of like shmup style scaling versus platformer scaling with larger sprites and all that. But I don't know, those games you were mentioning were later on games, and the animation's actually really good in Shinobi.
I think the chopper's really convincing too, the way it flies, and you know, and as you tilt it back when you slow down and stuff, that's very helicopter-esque. It's very cool.
Yeah.
It's always cool when you take off backwards and you rotate the chopper around. It's like very satisfying motion animation.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
And that motion kind of reminds me of, I was huge into Desert Strike and Jungle Strike on the SNES back in the day. And that was like the king of chopper physics for that kind of format. But yeah, that little takeoff spin animation is kind of fun to do. It's mm-hmm. kind of like a little show off thing, you know, you do as you take off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And every good movie from the 80s had a helicopter in it too. So, you know, just tying into shit we like.
Yeah, it was the short Airwolf. I think there's an Airwolf arcade game too. Airwolf. What is it? Cobra Command and a couple of... There's not that many chopper games.
I liked it when you're playing and the tanks came and you're like, oh, here come the tanks from Battlezone.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. That's kind of interesting.
I think there's a weird thing about the tank bullets. I think they don't kill you until they hit the ground and make an explosion. Like, they're kind of an exploding mortar. I swear that if they, like, hit you directly, you can, like, just kind of fly away, but if they kind of take an arc and then hit the ground and explode right where you are, then you die. It's very strange.
There's different levels of, like, I'll get into that when we talk about, like, the gameplay and stuff next.
Okay. But yeah, because there's definitely different ways of the weapons killing you.
Yeah. All right. Do you want to talk about the sound? The sound.
I like sound. Unless someone else wants to.
Go for it.
I was just going to mention that I actually like the sound a lot. Well, I think the sound's more redeeming to me than the graphics, because you have the little voices, and I love the laughing when you die, and a little laugh track, and the little minimized hostage, you know, voices, because they're far away, and they're little, reminds me of lemmings. They're all high pitched, you know, like,
save me, hello, thank you.
Yeah, I think the sounds in this game are really, really well done. The music too, I just think they really absolutely nailed it. The chopper sounds and the explosions, and I mean the evil laugh at the end too. I was looking up in the MAME source. Apparently, this uses two Texas Instruments SN76489 four-channel PSGs. I don't know other games that use that, but that kind of early 80s PSG sound signature is one that I really like, where it's like kind of raw, kind of harsh, definitely electronic. And then they started moving to like the FM synth Yamaha stuff in the late 80s, and I generally don't like that stuff as much. It's all like very smooth, and it doesn't quite have that rawness to it that the 80s PSG stuff does. So I really like the sound on this. I have no complaints. Music is good. I like the credits music as you're entering your initials on the scoreboard. I think that's the highlight musically of the game. But yeah, all around, just a great job on the sound design.
Yeah, it uses for the hardware, the system 1/2 is main CPU's Z80, sound CPU's Z80, and there's two sound chips. And this was also a says the hardware features are two layers plus sprites and then hardware collision detection. So
yeah, I like the sounds overall. I kind of wish that the voices that they have in there were a little more, I don't know, like they actually said something instead of just kind of making noises that sound like words, because sometimes it's hard to understand exactly what they're trying to say. Like, you know, you've got Wizard of War, Berserk, you know, earlier games that have actual voice sampling or, you know, actual words that can be said. And it seems like it'd be cool if this, especially this being like an 85 game, that they could have done something a little bit more with the voices, maybe some kind of sampling or something.
Yeah.
Speaking of the laugh, you know, I like the laugh. I like the sounds. Who's laughing at you though? Where is that voice coming from?
Yeah, that was my question too.
It's the enemy forces overlord, apparently. Or based on the first level, you'd think Saddam or something. But, you know, because there's like Scud missiles and shit. But the other cool sound is when you go rotor in to save an enemy and or a hostage, and you just cut them in half and they're like, ow! Or, yeah. So it does have, I get what you're saying about how you'd want it to be more clear, but it's kind of cool that they're kind of lemming-like, because it it gives you a sense of scale, like you're like they're far away and not discernible. You know, you're not going to hear shit if you're in a chopper. So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, not like it's a simulator or anything, but you know, I think it's just kind of like the charm of it. Like, I don't think they wanted to make it. Sega is that era is like kind of like the cutesy era. It's not like they don't want to do some gruff voices, you know. So it's part of the design.
The other thing I really liked is, again, attention to detail. Like when you're accelerating, the pitch of your chopper blades increases a bit. Like little things like that really add up and just make the game feel really full featured and well rounded. I like that stuff a lot.
Yeah, it even sounds different if you're like at a lower altitude as opposed to a higher altitude, I believe.
Ah, that could be it. So Sega did a really good job of reprogramming this, as it says. Is that what it says in the
reprogrammed.
Yeah. It's a Dan game reprogrammed by Sega.
Yeah, I don't think they phoned it in or anything, but I think they could have done a little bit better with some things. The sound though is definitely the highlight, and I usually don't say that, but the sound is more of a highlight to me than the graphics.
I guess you could say, too, that, you know, you have a droning sound, you know, a chopper. It makes the sound, but it's not annoying. So I'll give them points for that, too.
It's because you're firing all the time. you're firing as much as your rotor is turning, basically, if you want to succeed in this game. So
yeah, you're never not shooting, I don't think. It's a satisfying shooting sound, too. And they have different shooting sounds as well, the different enemies, correct? Or do some don't have sound? I don't think
the jets do. It seems like they just fucking fall out of their assholes
they just stick out a pixel there that just is right in the wrong place.
Yeah, and the other cool thing about the sound is when you die, we didn't talk about that, when you get hit by an enemy bullet or missile or whatever, the sound just goes, the sound just stops and you hear this crash. And then your chopper's a exploded mess that just falls on the ground, and you really get a good sense of, oh shit, I fucked
yeah,
up.
Yeah, it's like, not just and then the crash and burn.
Yeah, it's not like a flame. Most games where you just pop up all of a sudden with your next life. It's a real dramatic moment where it's just like impact, crash, and you're like, you get a second to
smolder,
think about your
wreckage.
Piloting mistakes.
And then I think it's when you killed a bunch of people is when the laugh comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So somebody had a good, sixth sense of humor there.
Is the since I never played the home versions, I keep on saying the home versions, but it should be like the original game, I guess, whatever that was on. Did they have any sounds at all?
There were sounds, definitely.
Like for the voices, I mean.
I think the people did make little chirpy, squeaky sounds. I mean, it's been a long time. I was like 10 years old. But I, it wasn't as elaborate as this, guaranteed.
I never played the original Apple one, just the PC port. And the PC had the worst sound of any of the era. So I can almost... Eventually, people did figure out how to do like 3-bit PCM over the PC honker, but there was nothing impressive happening on it in this era.
So the sound for the most part's from scratch then. So that's, it's cool.
When you say the honker, is that like pre-sound card where there isn't even a speaker?
Yeah.
Just the built-in stupid thing? Okay, yeah.
Well, there was a small speaker, but all it could do is make a beep at a different pitch. And people eventually figured out by bit banging it, by like making different pitch sounds and turning it off and on really rapidly, that you could like approximate PCM. But it took a long time to get to that point.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's the good summary of the cabinet, graphic, sound, gameplay. Or not gameplay, sorry. That's usually where we transition to the scoring.
Oh, we're going to talk about the games we played and the scores we got.
Yeah, and that's usually where we talk about the gameplay as well.
Oh. Strategy.
Yeah. Anybody want to talk about their games before we release the results?
No, let's do scores and then talk game.
Okay, sounds good to me. All right, so we all played this game. We all played it once. We'll start with the lowest score first. Was Ian, came in at 4,900 points. Oh, never mind. Oh, I thought these would be in order. I'm new at this. My first time. Okay, give me a break. So, spoiler alert, Ian is not the lowest score. The lowest score was Brandon with 4,200 points. Up next, we have Ian with 4,900 points. After that, I almost played the game of my life with 25,400 points. I was very surprised at that. But then there was Brian, who showed us a game of 48,250 points. So clear and away the winner today.
Yep. I watched a YouTube video at lunch, and it was someone that I believe was clearing the game on one credit. And I was like, all right, well, let me check this little video out. And so the strategy that this person put together on this game is that they would fly. And I guess this is the strategy for the game, is that you take off and you fly backwards through the battlefield. And that somehow confuses all the ground artillery to where they don't shoot you immediately when you're at the top. Because if for some reason, if you're facing the other direction, face forward, and you try to just hang out at the top, you get wrecked. But this way, you can pretty much just go to the top, fly backwards, maybe dip down a little to avoid some planes flying and maybe shooting. And you can get to the bunker where you blast it open and load up your hostages. And this person was also like kind of hopping the joystick a little, just like tapping it up as the guys were getting in. And I was wondering why he was doing that, but I was also noticing that no tanks would come out if you did this. So I guess it like maybe there's a timer for how long you're on the ground is when the tanks actually come out. So if you're just like hopping up in the air just a little bit as they're loading, then the tanks don't actually come to get you. So once you load everybody up, you can just switch your chopper the other direction and fly backwards back to the old mail station to drop off your hostages. And if you're careful, which I wasn't completely careful the whole time, then you can do this. And the person that was on the video, of course, was getting like perfect levels, which you get an extra 50,000 points if you get a perfect level, like you don't die in that level. And I don't know if that a perfect level accounts for losing any of the hostages, but he was getting like a 50,000 bonus at the end of each level. So yeah, that was my strategy. I learned it over my lunch break, and I was thinking that I was just going to try it blind on my first game, but I actually was able to play a game beforehand, and I was like, oh, this actually does work. So I tried to not raise my hand to go first so I could go last so none of you jerks could figure out the that was my strategy.
I watched a video of this game today, and I saw them using that backwards technique, but only on the return. On the flight out to pick up the hostages, they were in the normal way and just dodging everything. So I was like, oh, maybe I should try that on the way back. I didn't realize that you could do it on the way there too. But so I thought about it a bit, and I figured out why it works the way it does, which is that the game programmers assumed that you would be going the direction your chopper is facing and that you would want to see what's happening, right? So whatever direction you're when you're moving that direction, it's going to show you what the direction you're facing is where they're going to put most of the play field, right? So if you're moving facing to the left and you're flying left, then you see all the play field coming to you from the left. And if you're facing right, you see the play field coming to you from the right. But then if you're facing right and going left, what you'll notice is that you're right up on the left edge when you're going that direction. But if you're facing the correct way, then you're on the right edge. And being on the when the surface-to-air missiles come into view, they start blasting away at you. But when you're on the other side, they are facing the wrong way, and so they just can't get you. And the other thing that makes this work is the collision detection, which you can fly directly through a plane or just about anything else without taking damage. You only take damage if they actually shoot at you. So you don't have to be dodging too much in order to do that. So it's cheap, but
it's definitely cheap.
When I was playing last night, I was, playing the correct, well, I don't know if we can say correct way, but the normal way that you think you should play. And yeah, I was completely not making it through the first level, except for once I made it through the first level, and that was it. So yeah, I came into it before I saw that video thinking that I was not going to do very good.
Weak.
I was one guy away from seeing the second level. I rescued 19, goddammit. And then I think I wasted two or three men trying to get the last final fucker. And yeah, this game is hard, man.
Yeah, I think you like left a couple of guys when you even had capacity to transport them.
I thought I had them all. So I was just like, fuck it, I'm getting out of here. I'm not going to stick around. This is,
yeah,
but it wasn't.
Yeah, I was going to say something, but why would I do that? So,
I said something, but maybe no one can hear me over the sound or something.
Yeah, it was
I little, said something. I said, get him, load him up.
He was already committed.
Yeah.
He was on a mission.
I'm always afraid of dying in this game because that's the thing you do most. I mean, I played so many games. I wish I would have just watched a video instead of playing this stupid game for 45 minutes last night.
I guess I'm an outlier because when I play these games, I used to watch, unmentioned videos that we used to watch, and I don't do that anymore. And so I was just like, I'm just going to learn the game myself. I watched one video. There's a guy on YouTube that like has the cheat on, and he just fucking flies through everything. And it's just stupid because you can't tell if he's like dodging bullets or or the collision detection sucks, or he's exploiting. But
wait, so you're just saying you watched the wrong video?
No, I watch a video to get an idea of the gameplay, but I don't sit there and research exploits or cheap moves because I'll practice, but I'm going to practice the way that the game was designed. But I'm not going to fucking I'll point press, like I did in Congo Bongo, but that wasn't cheap. That was just the game, but I'm not gonna do shit that where you could, oh, I'm just invincible the whole level pretty much. I don't like doing that. I think that's the same way, like, you know, where people know like the whole Pac-Man patterns and all that. I just want to play the game myself, because if you play it the way that it's intended, that's when it's at its most enjoyable point. It's not enjoyable to me to fly backwards and shoot enemies you can't see and just sit there and fly around. Like, it just makes the game not fun to me. So,
well, I was playing the right way, and I tell you, it was not fun. It looked a lot more fun the way Brian was doing it.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
That's not fun.
It was pretty fun.
No, you were doing good. You were doing good, Jordan.
Yeah, but it wasn't fun. It fucked, sucked.
I mean, that's just the game then, right?
Stressful. I mean, yeah, no, I like what Brian was doing. That looked way more fun.
Well, I don't know. I feel like the last few games that we played, I've tried to play them as intended, and I've done really shitty. Like, tried to go through the Congo Bongo screens instead of, like, point pressing on the little holes, or what was it? What was the other game that we played just recently that I did really shitty at, where you're going back and forth, a Frogger-esque one? I can't even remember the name of it now. It was ZZX.
YZZX.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where you didn't even have to try to do the screen. It was a total, yeah. It was
yeah.
And everybody else figured out except for you, Brian.
Yeah, so there you go, guys.
Yeah, and the Congo Bongo holes. I remember that. I almost fucking got a decent score with that one. But.
Well, I mean, we usually played, you know, to have like a healthy competition. I don't really want to play anymore if we're just going to do like the exploits every single game.
Okay, we can quit playing these things. That sounds good.
No, I just meant like the cheap shit where everyone can get the max score thing. It's dumb. It's stupid.
You guys just didn't watch the right videos.
That's what I was saying. You watched a video.
I'm not posting on Twin Galaxies.
I believe it. None of us are. Yeah, no, but, you know, and again, we always say, oh, we just are going to play this game once. But, you know, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to try the game before I play it. I mean.
Oh, yeah. No, that's fine. I did that, too.
Yeah.
I played it about 15 times.
I hated every minute of it, man. I was fucking.
Yeah, it was kind of torturous. My top score was 54,000.
That's crazy good.
And I did not make it past the second sortie.
Two games of backwards playing, and you would have been there.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess my strategy, the hardest part for me was I was trying to, not the game that we actually recorded, but I was trying to see if it was worth slowing down for the jets, because my strategy that I learned myself was if you stay towards the top of the screen, usually when the jets come, they don't even fire at you. The AI is actually kind of dumb in this game. It's only successful because there's so many of them, but it's not really a smart AI. And so if you stay towards the top, it seems like maybe every other time the jets pass through, they'll shoot a missile that can basically hit you. And so you can't go up because you're at the top. So you go down, and if you don't go down early enough, you're dead. And then also if it's the same time where you're cruising through where all the SAMs are at, then you're dead too. So it was a really good balance of that. And I really do like the inertia, like when you're when you do the, I guess is it the inertia or the physics of the chopper when you're going from backwards to forwards, you know, there's like that delay where you're flying, you're going in heavy hot, and then you're like trying to reverse just to shoot level, right? Because to shoot straight across, you have to completely straighten out. And it's really damning to your momentum, because then now that you're vulnerable to the surface-to-air missiles, and it's a real risk-reward there. But yeah, like the practice games that I had, I would just stay at the top and just fly through it. And more often than not, I could make it through the full level. And then I kind of figured out what you were saying, Brian, about the, like when you're landing and you're bouncing up and down,
mm-hmm.
It seemed like, but what I would do instead is I would just kind of stay there. And if they shot and it was towards me, their shots are so slow that you can kind of like, you can, you know, raise your copter up a little bit and move and then go down. Yeah. And, the one mechanic that I felt like was underused in this game, and I feel like I don't know if it's a waste of a design, but when you're, we didn't talk about it at all, but when your chopper's facing towards the screen, it switches to like the bombs kind of. I don't know if it's the bombs or it's just a different perspective for the missiles, but
yeah, it's the bombs.
It's really hard to get to that, to that angle and then recover. And it seems like when the tanks are far away, you have to go all the way up to the top of the screen for your bombs to hit them. Mm-hmm. And you have to go lower if they're closer. That's kind of cool, but it seems like it's an underutilized just mode of the gameplay. I think they could have just had a bomb button or something like that.
I think the cool thing is if you get that 90-degree turn where now you're looking at the nose of the chopper, and then you fly just above the ground, and then you go left and right, and you like are strafing, and you get the tanks. I remember kind of doing that from the PC version. And we talked about sound on PC version. It's terrible. I just listened to a video of it. It's never mind.
it just didn't seem like you can do. Maybe it's easier to play with a joystick and the two buttons just right there.
We used to have those joysticks on the Apple. It's like the tail gunner joystick where it doesn't return to center really. They were good. They're Wico. They were made by Wico. They had two buttons, and I totally remember that. Those were the sticks that we had. Or that one.
I remember on PC I had a similar one, except it had a button that you could use to engage a centering spring, or you could have it uncentered.
Oh, cool. Neat.
That was fancy shit.
It's the Monroe with option.
Yeah. One thing that I noticed when I was playing, and I tried this strategy a bit and I couldn't get it to work, but one of the things I noticed is that the planes only shoot you when you're in the air, and the tanks and stuff only shoot you on the ground. And if you fly just above the ground, there's this area where you're pretty unlikely to be hit. The problem with that is that the surface-to-air missiles are on the ground on your approach, and they will wreck you. And if you're going full tilt, you're just shooting at the ground right in front of you. You know, you have no angle to do anything, so you end up having to, you know, speed up and then slow down so you can level out and then take out all of the surface-to-air missiles. And I was like, maybe I should just, instead of going balls out, maybe I should go really slow and just, you know, fly super low until I see a surface-to-air missile and then take it out and just keep like hopping around like that until I get this. But I was not able to successfully employ it. I felt like my success rate was about the same as just flying and playing normally. But I think it's interesting that, you know, you have both air and ground-based enemies, but they're mostly exclusive. And so you have a window of opportunity in there where you can, you know, use the way they're shooting to their advantage. Because the planes only shoot in the air, and the surface-to-air missiles only shoot up. And the jeeps and things, you know, have little rocket launchers, and then tanks only hit the ground. So, I don't know. I'd like to explore that a little more.
Yeah. You brought up a good point about the collision detection again. It's like, I don't know if it's an annoying thing or if it's a... I mean, obviously, with this game, with how difficult it is, it's a huge benefit. But it does kind of bother me that you can just fly right through planes. To me, that's kind of dumb. It feels like, oh, shit, is there like a cheat on or something? Like, I'm flying head-on with a jet, and it's just like, hey, yeah, see ya. And then you're flying, you know, like there's stuff on the ground, just flying straight through it. I do like the mechanic of if you head straight into the ground, you explode. But if it's the post office, you can just fucking full on deep dive right to it and land and not get hurt. Like that. That's kind of a fun. I like that, how they designed that.
You can't die at the post office?
No, you can just fucking dive full speed and straight down without any slowing down. And that's cool because, you know, there's a lot of those games in the 80s and 90s where, like, no, maybe this is just like PTSD from Top Gun on NES, where it's impossible to land on the aircraft carrier. But I felt it very successful or very satisfying that you could just full speed land into the helipad, because it was like, oh, cool.
So I think I fucked around on the helipad once, like just sitting there for too long, and a plane did come shoot me. A plane, not a tank. Yeah.
That I think that happened too. In my game when we played.
Yeah, I was playing earlier and I had to leave the room, and then right as I was getting up, a jet came by and shot me on the.
Yeah.
You think they would have, like, you know, when you leave the helipad and there's like this little line, there's like, I don't know if they're like lights or something. You think that'd be like a safe zone? That would make sense, because the other mechanic we didn't talk about is you take off, and the first hostage base is always the closest. And after you kill all the surface to air missiles, you know, you land, and then you have the jets and the ground shit to deal with, like the tanks and jeeps. But on the way back, it's just jets, and you'd think that that'd be like the safe zone. Like once you cross that, it's like a one of the annoying things about this is the backtracking you have to do, where you're like, I mean, it makes sense. It kind of plays into the fact of like you're rescuing, like, oh shit, we have to go back. We don't have room because you can only carry 8 guys. So, you know, after you rescue the first hostage area, you have to like fly over that first one and go to the second one. And it's kind of cool how you can clear out stuff, and that stuff hasn't respawned. That's cool. Like the ground stuff doesn't respawn, but the jets constantly respawn.
Yeah, fuck. If the ground stuff respawned, oh my god, this game would be impossible. I would throw my computer away.
Yeah, so you get some relief. So that's kind of cool.
I think the other thing we didn't mention is that the first area where there are hostages, they're just milling around, but then you get to the second one, they're trapped inside and you have to shoot the building to release them, which I think is clever game design, because I don't think it would be obvious that you have to shoot the first building. But once you see that and then you're flying around and shooting some more stuff, I think it's a good, like, training you how to play the game by playing the game kind of thing.
Yeah, it sucks when you're coming in hot shooting and you hear one of the hostages scream. Yeah. You're like, oh no, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
Yeah, that happened to me. That
you're not going to have a full load of dudes.
Yeah,
it's disappointing. I had shot that building open. That's funny. I didn't know that it was automatically open.
Yeah, it's kind of disappointing, because as soon as you're going in full steam, you have to, the very first one, and you have to know to let off just right there. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you'll tag the first two guys. And you don't know that until you play it a couple of times. And then, but it was kind of a mystery to me. I think I saw it in a video, and that's how and I don't know if it's in the attract mode, if you blown up the other buildings, but it is kind of a mystery. It's not really intuitive that you have to like blow through I mean, I guess it's implied, hey, shit, there's no one else here. You got to blow something up. But that's a good change up in the mechanics. It does pretty good. There's some depth in this game that, you know, like with the bombs and stuff that are maybe underutilized, but it's cool that it's there. And
like the fuel is worthless as far as I could tell, you know.
Well,
it's a good mechanic, but it doesn't seem like it matters.
Yeah. In one of my practice games, I tried flying to the very end on the first sortie without rescuing anyone, just going to the end and then breaking open that one. And then flying back, but I ran out of fuel.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Because it replenishes, right? And so I don't think you can... I don't know if they tax you if you don't... I think it may go down faster, maybe, if you dick around. Because there's, like, two bars. There's, like, a blue bar, and then there's, like, an overlapping red bar or something like that. And the other thing that's obvious, but we didn't specifically mention it, is this is a game where you control the scrolling, like Defender. And then there's obviously other games. The one that comes to mind that's not even related is Area 88 or UN Squadron. It's just kind of because that's a military-based, you know, shmup. But in those games, the screen moves for you, right? There's the format of shmups where you move the screen, or the computer or the game moves the level for you. And the advantage is you know, like in Defender, where you feel like you have more freedom. That's kind of a cool mechanic, right? Where you're in control. Right, you can go back, you can go forward, you're not restricted with the game. I almost feel like this game, actually, that wouldn't work, but I was going to say, it would work if it was fixed scrolling, but except for the fact where you have to like backtrack and return. But the only thing I don't like is where you're heading in full steam, and you know the way that the enemies are presented, it's like they're right there in your face, so there's not much time to react. And since you're in a helicopter and there's that inertia going back, and to potentially like shoot forward, it's almost pointless. Like you don't have time to do that. And so then you're just kind of like going like up and down, and you're like, okay, this is a waste of time. I'm just going to just full throttle it. And so the way that the enemies come on the screen and the way that you're like flying through it, it's just so in your face and tense. It's really hard to manage. It makes it extremely difficult.
Yeah. You mentioned Defender, and I mentioned that as well, but I think it's worth saying explicitly that this has definitely got some inspiration or ripoff of ideas from Defender. Definitely the scrolling both ways, the being able to reverse your direction, rescuing hostages, getting them back to the base. Those are very Defender-esque. And I guess I don't have much more to say other than that, but it's maybe a case of like the PC version of Choplifter being inspired by arcade Defender and then the arcade Choplifter circling background.
You're like, hey, I get the graphics power now, bitch. I'm going to copy you even better. And yeah. I think it does a good job.
I liked your point about how you control the scrolling because, yeah, that's, you know, your traditional shmup, whether it be vertical or horizontal, you know, it's just driving for you and you can move around the play field, but you have no control over the scroll, over the scrolling. And yeah, it definitely is a very different feel being able to choose where you go forwards or backwards and at what rate. And I like that mechanic in this game a lot.
Yeah, you can choose the rate, but you can't choose where you are on the screen. It's different, you know. It's a trade-off, right?
Yeah, no matter where you're at, the enemies are coming. And if you go slow, though, like
a Major Havoc roller to control the scrolling and then also move around the screen and shoot.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. Slow down, it sticks you on the leading edge of the scroll where you're going to probably die real quick because the enemy's going to be right there. You're better off going fast because then it backs your ship more towards the trailing edge of the scroll, if that makes any sense. You get to shoot at more of the screen.
Well, yeah. That's the opposite strategy for this, right? Because what you want to do is fly backwards so you're not at the trailing edge. Because when you're at the leading edge, the fact that the collision detection with the other airplanes doesn't kill you, you know, you can fly straight through them. That means that it behooves you to be on the leading edge because then you're flipping that around. They don't have the chance to react to you. And as far as, you know, flying through enemies, I think it feels weird from a normal shmup perspective, but you know, parallax scrolling, it's a 3D world. You know, you're not playing on paper. It's a flyby.
Yeah, well, yeah. But their bullets are on that plane, though. So
they're heat-seeking missiles.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Their aim is amazing.
Then they should have put some fucking depth in the bullet animation, then like it deviating and then going towards the screen or something. The only other thing that I'll comment on with the scrolling and all that is that I really wish this game had. I don't know if you guys know the Darius and. Or is it Darius? I don't know. It's like the tomato, but
I would that name for like 15 years. I don't know how to say it. Yeah, I say it different every day.
Yeah, it was Darius in Ninja Warrior was Taito's three screen hardware, and in Darius, I've even said it different. The more I say it, the enemies are so far away and it's so barren. That it actually makes the game boring because you could see the enemies so far away. It's the opposite of an intense shmup, and almost the same problem with Ninja Warrior where you could see the enemies so far away. It's like the element of surprise, and it's almost like the pacing of the game is ruined. But I think in a game like this where you're moving super fast, it would be really cool if this was on a twin screen hardware game where you can kind of see stuff a little bit ahead of time. It wouldn't even make the game easier, but it would be. I think it'd make it cooler. Not like they would ever do that, but
strategy a little bit better because you'd be able to see, you know, the hostage buildings or that you're about to come up on a rocket launch or something like that. I think the one other thing about the scrolling that really affects the game strategy is that, like I mentioned before, your velocity determines the angle that you shoot, right? So if you're going full speed, you're pointing down at about 45 degrees. It's not that much. That's, you know, a little shallower than that. But the the things you can shoot are like a diagonal from where you are to the ground. You cannot shoot things that are directly in front of you. And if you want to do that, you have to slow down. I guess, Brandon, you mentioned this before about like, do you slow down in order to take them out or not? But I think that's an interesting trade-off for like, you know, your actual ability to deploy your weapons is based on your speed. You can't aim them directly in front when you're going full tilt. And if you go backwards, you can shoot up. So you can kind of like rock back and forth to clear from the top to the bottom of the screen if you need to like get rid of a ton of planes or something.
Yeah, I think the it's kind of frustrating because maybe it's because you're a pieced together smuggled chopper and you're not equipped, but you know, you probably would have a ground, you know, some ground guns, right, that shoot down for the SAMs and missiles for airborne enemies, but no chopper's ever going to engage a fucking jet. So, I mean, it's possible, but that typically does not happen. And I guess they have to, and there's only so many like enemies I guess you can have in a game, but it seems like maybe if you're against other choppers or something, or maybe only ground enemies, I think the game would have been better. Like, just imagine if it was just ground.
Yeah, got to give some MP15s to all those hostages, like just fucking fire in every direction as you're going back.
Yeah, there should be a Rambo NPC that you save that just has a fucking M60 and he has like a little fucking bandana and he's helping you out, like if you're slacking.
When you land, it should say get to the chopper.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking that first hostage prison that you come across where they're all just milling about, they should be like sabotaging those guns and like taking those guys out over there to help you out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why aren't they manning that SAM missile or that Jeep? Or what if you could drop them off in a Jeep and then they could help you out during the missions? And then you could play a two-player could chime in and you could be the Jeep ground support.
Did we mention that if you lose 12 hostages that you have to start over, which is so frustrating when you hit that, when you've like, you know, when you gotten shot out of the sky with like two full loads of hostages and then all of a sudden it's like you have to start over from scratch. You're like, God damn it.
Yeah, that's kind of I think they could have done without that. It seems meaningless. Like, it's already gonna take your quarters. Like, why punish you and restart it? It seems like a real dick move.
At that point, mathematically, it's impossible to clear the level. So they're actually giving you a chance to clear the level. Like, there's too many dead guys. You can only like save 8, and then what? So the game would be fucked. You'd be like, okay, I saved the last 8 guys, but I need 20. Now what? And I've killed everything on the ground. Now I just fly around and shoot at jets.
Yeah, earn an extra guy and then crash.
Well, there's more there's more than 20 guys on the screen.
Yeah, but if you've lost 12, I think that's the map. I think there's like 32 or something total, and that's it. So if you lose more than 12, there's no way of getting 20.
Well, let me ask you this then. What happens in Defender if you just fucking hose all the dudes?
It's fine. You can still clear the level.
So then they should just do that and you get like a fucking demotion or something.
Well, eventually it'll go to hyperspace, right?
Yeah, don't you go to hyperspace if all the guys?
Hyperspace if all the guys are dead. Yeah, if you haven't saved anybody and you lose all the guys, it goes to hyperspace. There's no more mountains and all the normal green guys who are easy to shoot turn into mutants. And it's fucked. You die pretty soon.
Yeah, they could have done that. They could have put you in some like war fucking hell or something like... Yeah, I guess that's cool, but
they had to do something. I mean, they could have just they could have spawned more nice guys, but that doesn't make sense either.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way. That's a good point. I guess that it's not a dick move. It's a helpful nice move, I guess, because they're like, hey, you fucking put money into this machine, we'll give you another chance. But they could have been brutal, I guess. Move. Yeah, they could have been brutal and said like, well, you know. You're done. You lost an extra guy or, you know, 10,000 points or something. But, you know, like the flyer says, it says, you know, how many hostages can you bring back alive? So it's like, hey, there's not a requirement. It's just like, how many can you bring back?
24. That's how many you can bring back.
Yeah.
8 times 3.
Yeah. There's a lot of depth to it. A lot of nuance and very specific things that you have to do, and that is a cool factor for it. All right, I guess it's time to get into reviews then.
I'm gonna say
ratings.
I'm down. I can go first.
Do it.
Okay. This game for me, it's a good game. I enjoyed it as a PC game. As an arcade game, it does not do it for me. It's too hard for one. It's very difficult. You can get better at it by playing it over and over again. The flying backwards thing notwithstanding. I'll probably try it that way now, but anyhow, playing it the normal way, or flying forwards, it was not enjoyable for me. I do like the graphics, the sound, that's all good. I like the gameplay, but there's just no enjoyment in this game. And I don't want to put the time in to try to get better at it. It basically doesn't have a lot of randomness to it either. Pretty much the same thing happens the same way every single time. So you can just, you can train yourself to do it on a pattern. It's fine here. You duck down here. You'll tilt here. You go balls out here. It does do the same things every single time. So I don't think requires a lot of thought as far as how to play it. It's mostly just, just dexterity, I suppose. as far as moving the joystick around and mashing the button. And I think I've said before, I'm kind of getting tired of games where you have to shoot the whole time as well. So for me, this is just a quarter muncher. Looks nice, sounds nice, but it's coins down.
All right, Jordan, who are you picking to go next?
Okay. Brandon, what do you think of this game?
I love it. What are you thinking of? This is like Hollywood Squares here. I kind of agree with you, Jordan. I love like military based shooters or just any game because they're pretty rare, right? It's always about space shit, and so these are like outliers, and they're pretty fun when they're done right, and because you expect these games to be a little bit more realistic because it's not space and all that, but. Yeah, I felt it was just so difficult. Like you were saying, it is a matter of dexterity. It's not, you don't really feel like there's much skill. Like when you're avoiding asteroids. And asteroids, I guess that's dexterity too, but you feel like you have a chance. Or if you're like, purely because you're in a helicopter, so you don't have that like super fast movement and all that, and couple that with the enemies on screen, it's just relentless. And I did make it to the second sortie. Looks like there's what, four total, and that one seemed even harder, the ships and all that. I liked everything else though, like the graphics, I like the sound, the controls are really good actually, like they you don't feel like those are limiting. I just feel like it's too hard. Maybe they could have gone easier on you on the first, sortie and kind of ramped it up. But and maybe I'm just not good at games. I don't know. But I feel like it's very heavy in the skill level right away. But I really, really wanted to coins up this one, but I'm going to be coins down on this one as well. I don't really see getting better, and I don't really feel like flying backwards to improve my score, because that's kind of dumb and not fun. So, coins down. Brian?
Yeah, I can see what you guys are saying about it. It is super hard. Going into this, like I was saying, I didn't think I was going to do very well until I learned that one weird trick flying backwards. It kind of opens it up a little bit because, as I demonstrated, you can still, get shot down doing that trick, but it kind of opens it up to being able to get farther in the game. I don't think I would ever own this game, but I do enjoy playing it, and I even enjoyed playing it when I was, before I learned the trick of going backwards last night when I was playing it many times. It was one of those where I was just, oh, I need to play it again because I can get farther. And it is one that I've just over the years, I've always enjoyed playing. So I'm going to give it a coins up, even though it is super hard. And I don't think that it's like Jordan was saying, like it's exactly the same each time. I think there is some randomness with the planes, like depending on how high your chopper is, it kind of depends on where the jets come out. I think there is some randomness with the jets.
I agree with you there now that you mentioned that. That is true. It does depend on where you're flying, where the jets are coming out. So it isn't all the same. Sorry, I'll take that back.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, it's definitely a hard game, but yeah, I do enjoy playing it, and I would play it again. So yeah. That leaves Ian.
Go ahead.
No, that's fine.
I was just saying, yeah, I enjoyed playing it too with you guys, but it was kind of laborious going through it. And I actually did find myself going back more and more, but I almost thought that was just to get better to play tonight. I don't think I normally would have gave it so many chances. You know, there's been games that we played that they're actually, I do want to go back to because it's interesting and, but this one seems so brutal to me that I don't know if I ever want to. I mean, I'll probably play it again, but I always say that, but I probably won't.
I think for a 1985 game, it's like one that I would return to as opposed to lots of games that are later in the 80s and into the 90s that it's like, I really don't want to play this anymore.
Yeah. Like Monster Bash.
So, man, I really wanted to like this game more than I did. I agree with what's been said. The difficulty level is way too high, and the difficulty level doesn't really ramp up significantly. It's just, shooting you in the face, like the attract screen from the moment you hit the start button. And I think I played more games of this than almost any other meme of the episode, just because I was like, this is so frustrating. You know, I played probably four or five games where I rescued no hostages in the game that I played, I think.
Really?
I don't think I rescued a single one. Maybe I rescued one loadful. But I was like, damn, this, like, what's wrong? Why is this so hard? And I just kept playing it and was not doing significantly better. You know, I think I did pretty okay on the first game I played, and then every other game was fucking brutal. I mean, it's got so much going for it in every other department. I think the graphics are amazing. I think the sounds are amazing. I think the cabinet is pretty cool looking. But man, they needed to rebalance the gameplay on this game to make it more fun. Like, the level one difficulty should be at like level three. They should get, like, it's kind of ridiculous that that it's so difficult to even get off the first level. And I think that's just a failure of game design, and that makes it not very fun for me. And then, like, I enjoyed playing it with you all because I think, you know, that's the reason we're doing the show, is because we enjoy doing that sort of thing. And yeah, Brian's one weird trick, which was exactly how I was thinking of it. I was like, okay, well, it just felt like bullshit, you know, like a total cop-out. Like, they designed the game, but then I don't think they intended people to play it that way. I think it's just an unintended consequence of how they built it. And the fact that that's the only way you can get a decent score just emphasizes to me how poorly balanced the actual game they designed is. So... it's unfortunate because I really do like so many things about it, but I just did not find it fun. I found it very frustrating, and I am therefore coins down on this title, despite having chosen it. But it did make for a good discussion, and I think it had a lot of good things going for it. Even the gameplay depth, I think, is uncommon and good and worth exploring. But man, they sure do make it hard to actually enjoy playing the game.
Yeah, I agree with that last part. Like just the bombs thing I mentioned, like, it's very hard to even, if you scroll left, if you scroll right, how do you have time to do the bombs? Because then the jets come. It's like, it's kind of like a throwaway mechanic to where it's so difficult to execute. And yeah, I love the mechanics too, though. Like rescuing hostages, and then it's cool how you're like, it's like a level within levels, right? There's like four levels because you have to rescue like multiple hostages. That's cool. Like how it doesn't end there. You have to go back into the action. Like all that stuff is so cool, and like busting into the buildings and waiting for them to like fully load in. You can't just be like, you can't just break the building open and get eight guys immediately. You have to wait for them to walk up, and all that shit's like so cool, but it's goddamn, it's difficult.
We mentioned this a little bit, but the controls on this game are really good. You know, they feel tight, they feel responsive. They nailed so much about this game that many other games just don't get right, or are not where they should be. But yeah, just the balance of the gameplay is out of whack, at least for my tastes. I'm sure there are people who enjoy games that are this difficult, but I'm not one of them.
I think it's like Sega kind of took a great game, you know, that the players liked. You know, it was very successful on multiple platforms, and kind of
3 years prior
took it away from the players and gave it to the hands of the greedy operators.
Yeah.
Well, Sega. I think it is normal for the coin-op version to be harder than the home version. I think that's a thing. Like many of the arcade games I enjoy, I was first exposed to in the home port form, and the arcade versions are always harder. So I think that's just normal for the coin-op version to be much more difficult than the home version. But it's out of whack in this case. So that said, I am going to play this game again because I want to try the backwards trick. Like, does that actually make it more fun? I think it's bullshit. Just to
how's
be clear.
That, like, how's that fun? That
but
how's
the, yeah. Because almost anything is better than just getting shot down over and over again and having your game be over in 30 seconds. That's why.
Yeah, but yeah.
But I'm also going to play the C64 version because I think that's might actually be more fun.
I just don't see how it's fun when all you're doing is holding up and right and just tapping the fire button. I mean, I know like the opposite.
You have to dodge some shots too. I mean, you can't just hold up.
I know, but it just looks kind of dumb. It's like shit. I can drive my fucking car backwards down the street if I want to because it works, but it's fucking ridiculous and I have to like look over my shoulder the whole way. Like it.
What if you got 100 miles to the gallon? If you did that, you would do it.
I think it's geared too high for that. But I mean, maybe. Yeah, maybe that will work. And maybe that's something that you've discovered. But I don't know. And that doesn't seem fun to me. And the other thing is, yeah, it's all about the pacing. You can have, we've said this 68 times now, maybe 60, because we haven't had a game of the episode every episode. But you can have... you can have shitty graphics, you can have shitty sound, you can have awesome controls or even sub or average controls, and if the gameplay is there and like everything aligns, it's like, you know, Targ, Spectar, whatever like that, it just works and it's good and it's enjoyable. But this is like the one game where it has everything. It has graphics, it has sounds, the controls, but then it's lacking the key element of gameplay and pacing and ramping up difficulty, and it just kind of kills it. I mean, yeah, I played like maybe like 10 or 15 times and I got to the second sortie once, and that's when I got that higher scored game. And so I thought I was going to do pretty good, but you know, like all the games we play, it's cold start. But yeah, think about the other games like Asteroids or Robotron or even like Centipede, like all those games that are like, you know, deemed classics, you can always make it past the first level, usually pretty easily. And, you know, it could still be challenging, but the fact that it's a chore to get to the second sortie in this, that'd be like getting probably like 95% of the time never seeing the second map in Donkey Kong or Pac-Man. Yeah. You know, would those games be classics? If that were the case, probably not. And that's kind of like the perspective I put it in, you know, it's that pacing and that design is shit. It's balanced like Ian said, poorly.
Yeah, they probably should have taken it a little bit easier on you on the first level and maybe made you rescue 10 hostages, like where you a full load and then a couple more. And then the next sortie, you have to rescue 20. Probably would have been better.
That's a good idea. Like, yeah, that's a perfect... That you could even leave the balancing or the enemy difficulty the same. And if your requirement was to rescue less, that would be the perfect compromise. Like, you could still have all that shit. And if I only had to rescue, like, 16 or, 12 or whatever, that would be awesome. Because then you could... That would allow a point-pressing element in that first sortie, right? Because you could go... you could do extra. Like, what if it said, okay, you got 12. Do you want to continue on or do you want to go, like, the full fucking thing? And you could, like, land and just quit, or you could point-press and get more hostages. Essentially, the first level would become, a point-pressing opportunity, like a bonus almost, right? Those extra guys. That would be cool.
Just like...
that would change the whole review.
Those classic games do become, you know, once you're good at them, that first level, you just try to get a perfect score. It's still fun to play. You just want to get it perfect. So make the first level easy.
Yeah. Maybe if they made the first level easy, but I don't even think that's enough, because there's games like Zookeeper where it's like a snooze fest the first like three or four levels, and then it gets really, really difficult. That's like the opposite of it. Like that, they hand you way too much. And it is really a delicate balance of like, first two, maybe give them like three levels. And then the fourth level, the one that hinges on the repeating of the maps, that's like your goal, right? Like you'll feel some sort of completion, you know, maybe that's the super challenging one.
In Zookeeper, if you die right away, they give you they just like, oh yeah, never mind. You don't have to lose a life yet, because they'll like just give it to you. It's like, you don't understand what you're doing. We understand. We get it. Have another try.
I like the Atari way of balancing gameplay, which is that like anytime you have the first couple of levels really easy, then once you get the hang of it, you're like, oh, I have to slog through this shit. Like Pac-Man and Ms. Pac-Man are super like that, because I played those so much. Like the first 10 levels are just a drag because they go so slow. Mm-hmm. And I really like Atari's skill step feature, where you can start out at the very beginning or you can jump ahead some number of levels so that you can choose the difficulty. And that would have been well placed on this game if the early levels were easy, but you could also jump ahead if you wanted.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways you can go. And then on top of the skill step, there's the adaptive gameplay too, I think they have. And I don't know if that's just the option of the skill step or not, but I know Havoc had the adaptive difficulty dip, where if you start to do better, it increases difficulty on the later levels. I think Gravatar might have had that too, a lot of the color vectors. But yeah, you don't want to fucking grind through the levels to where it becomes a chore and boring, but... You know, you want to give a sense of like building up and completion, right? Like maybe, like Brian said, less hostages. Maybe the first map is like 10. Maybe the second map is 15 and 20 and so on. Like,
sure. Or you could even like select the difficulty level and have it tell you how many per level, like have it change the curve that they increase by.
Yeah. And,
yeah, change the bonus.
And it's just Choplifter. It's not like, you know, we're not trying to criticize it as, you know, to the point to where it's just a meaningless game. There's a lot of redeeming values to it, but, you know, as far as ratings go, we can either coins up or coins down. So
all right, and we did it.
Yeah. You guys want to wrap this Choplifter up?
Sounds good.
Indeed. Oh wait,
lift it.
I forgot I had a fun fucking fact about
this game. Shit.
Okay.
Yeah. Did you know the game came in a dedicated Sega cabinet? In fact, it's more rare to see it in this version than seeing it converted from the rare games like dedicated Major Havocs, Firefox. I'm actually reading off what I wrote, but you'll also see it in a Choplifted quotes Dragon's Lair cabinets and other Chop laser games. For whatever reason, the Sega cabinet's pretty rare, and so. You know, like a lot of these games, you'll see them, you know, they're conversion games or whatever, but this game butchered the fuck out of a lot of laser games and a lot of like rare games for some reason. Like I've seen this in the Firefox cabinet where they rip the yoke out and they just put the joystick in it. In the Havoc cabinet, and I've seen it in like multiple Dragon's Lair cabinets. And since the I say choplifted because whenever conversion games were put into like Dragon's Lair, they had to like chop off the marquee front, you know, because Dragon's Lair has that, I can't really describe it, the beveled out curved marquees. And so
yeah,
that's why you'll always see those chopped Dragon's Lair cabinets, so they could put a flat marquee on it. But I guess this was the era where choplifted a bunch of games. So
yeah,
a lot of rare games.
$50 game at that point. Another reason not to like it.
So next episode we will be doing. So if you send us any emails or voicemails, we will get to them next episode. And if you want to send something in for us to talk about, and or just to tell us what you guys are up to, or you know, what your scores are on Choplifter, you know, send them on in at coinrejects@gmail.com, or you can voicemail us at
503-766-2263.
And I'm going to do something unprecedented this time, and I'm going to announce the game of the episode for next episode. Ooh. Right now.
Woo!
Do you mean episode 70? Because we're going to do the feedback episode next.
That's right.
So I'm going to give you guys the next game we're going to play, since I'll be picking it. So if any of you want to play it and send us your scores or your thoughts about it, that would be great. Originally, I was thinking about picking Mr. Dew's Castle, but we spent so much time talking about Flicky that I think we're going to play Flicky next time.
All right.
So get to flicking.
I'm going to play it backwards.
I'm going to walk on my front paws instead of my back paws and see if that makes it more advantageous.
Yeah, do what you got to do. What was that, Ian?
I'm not going to flick anything.
I'm too unwieldy for that. I just noticed on the bezel art, the instruction insert, it does say to use machine guns to destroy prison doors to free hostages so they may be rescued. But there is no machine guns. You only have missiles.
Are those missiles or are those machine guns?
It says use machine guns. It's clearly a missile. I mean, it's a giant white fucking thing.
Maybe it's a machine gun.
That's a big fucking machine gun bullet. Definitely. I mean, it's the size of a person. It's
colored. It has a black tip and a white body like a missile. Because, yeah.
Yeah.
They look nice. I mean,
machine missiles.
What is a machine gun anyhow? Guns are machines. Missile shooters are machines. Right.
Bullets are like little missiles.
Loose translation.
All right, so everybody go play some Choplifter, and we'll see you next time.
Chop shitter.
Goodbye.